Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Mr. Murdoch, do you accept that ultimately you are responsible for this whole fiasco?
No.
You're not responsible. Who is responsible?
The people that I trusted to run it, and then maybe the people they trusted.
Let's talk Murdoch and company for a few minutes. There was Rupert under questioning, not taking personal responsibility, but rather saying it was his underlings who were responsible for the hacking and the paying off the police and da-da-da-da-da-da. Did Rupert and Son actually get away unscathed yesterday by blaming everything on their deputies, of whom they had no knowledge? It wasn't just that answer. We made a montage of some of James Murdoch's answers to specific questions about the phone hacking and payoffs to police, etc. Listen.
I don't have direct knowledge of that. Not to my knowledge. I cannot. I don't know the exact arrangements. I'm happy to supply written answers. I don't believe so. But not to my knowledge. And that does not mean that I have any knowledge of anyone intentionally misleading me in the company. I don't. Which makes it doubly frustrating. I have no knowledge of that. I have no knowledge of that at this point. But I don't have direct knowledge, and I'm not in a position to answer those questions.
There is the WNYC Murdoch, the Sun, no knowledge of anything montage from his testimony yesterday. So, Felix Salmon, did Rupert and Sun actually get away unscathed by blaming everything on their deputies?
I wouldn't say they were unscathed, but this is an expectations game, and somehow they managed to do a little bit better than some people had feared. So, obviously, they put forward this front of, I have no idea what was going on, I'm terribly important, it was my underlings, I got bad advice, and it's all their fault. And nobody really believes that, which is lucky, because if people did believe that, then both of them would be completely unqualified to run a company the size of News Corp. So the fact that people do trust them to run News Corp, at least to some degree, is an indication that no one really believes that what they said to Parliament was the whole truth. But what they're trying to do here is just stonewall and bluster, which is more or less the tactic they've been following for the past 2 years, which hasn't worked very well for the past 2 years because it wound up with, you know, this particularly low point in News Corp's history. But it's a continuation, you know, they're sticking to their guns and they're tough, and it's going to be hard to unseat them, I think.
Right. So on the one hand, he says it's not his fault, Rupert Murdoch. On the other hand, he started by saying this.
I would just like to say one sentence. This is the most humble day of my life.
So if he wasn't responsible for any of the problems, then why would it be the most humble day of his life? Could you connect those dots?
No. I mean, you really can't. I mean, that was part of the big PR spin, right? You need to turn up and be apologetic and leak to lots of people in the press that you held your head in your hands when you were meeting with the family of a murdered schoolchild and they apologized repeatedly without taking responsibility, which is a weird kind of apology. It's like, I'm sorry that this happened, but it's not my fault. Which is, you know, so the thing which struck me most about the hearing was actually how unapologetic Rupert Murdoch seemed. You know, he came out with his little soundbite at the beginning saying he was humble, which, you know, he's never been humble. And then when anyone was asked, you know, is this your fault? He's, no, of course it's not my fault.
I want to go right to the phones because Gordon is spending money to sit on hold from Milan, Italy. Gordon, hello. Thank you so much for calling in.
Oh, much pleasure. Much pleasure in doing this.
But you sound like an American. I thought we were going to have some.
I am. I'm living in Italy for 5 years.
Okay.
For health reasons, and I'm listening to you guys every day on your WNYC media player.
Thank you. You need to develop more of a Milanese accent, though.
They actually tell me I do have a Milanese accent when I speak in Italian.
So what's your question or thought?
Thoughts, questions. One, it seemed to me like Rupert Murdoch threw his son under the bus yesterday. by saying that either his underlings or the ones that they trusted are for blame. Two, you know, it just strikes me as a continuation of bad journalism, bad faith behavior on News Corp's part, way back to Gore and the elections and the lead up to the Iraq War. It just seems to be just systemic in every facet of their daily behavior.
Well, I wonder if the ideology of Fox News and other News Corp products come into it at all. Gordon, before you go, and I'll get you, you know, your answers from Felix, is this a big story there? Is this a big deal in Italy in the media?
It was uninterrupted for about 2 hours yesterday on Rai News, which is the state-owned 24-hour TV outlet. And then they went to general coverage. But later on, they returned to a big chunk of time with Rebecca Brooks. It's on the front pages for 2 weeks now of all the newspapers. So, yes,
so
very
yes,
much
very
so.
Very much so. All right. So did you hear his two questions, Felix?
I did. And remember as well, this is actually interesting that we're on the phone to Italy right now, because one of the Murdochs' defenses, Rupert's Murdoch defense of James Murdoch, was, hey, he was incredibly busy during this time in Italy. Because they own this television network there called Sky Italia, which has this in this big fight with Silvio Berlusconi, and so James was far too distracted with Sky Italia to pay attention to what was going on at News International in the UK. That was the defense, which wasn't particularly convincing, I have to say. So I don't know if that was throwing James under the bus. And remember, too, that all of the phone hacking happened before James was in charge. So what James was in charge of was the cover-up and the hush money and the paying of the legal fees of the convicted felons and that kind of thing.
Which he said he didn't know about. And look, if a guy gets up there and says, I have 53,000 employees, I can't know all the misdeeds that individuals are doing and hiding from me because I'm the boss and they don't want me to know that. I mean, that could be a true statement.
It could be, but it just doesn't square with anything we know about Murdochs and the way that they run their newspapers. Especially Rupert Murdoch, who is known to be extremely hands-on. And, for instance, if you're James Murdoch and you pay Graham Taylor, and this is something which came up many times in the hearing and without a lot of resolution, if you pay Graham Taylor £700,000, which is well over $1 million, in the settlement of a court case, why are you paying that much? And is it credible to believe that you're paying that much without knowing that what you did wrong was tap his phone?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that seems to be what James is saying, is, oh, yeah, we knew we were going to lose the court case, so we paid him £700,000 to go away, but no one told me why we were going to lose the court case.
Right, and pay him that much. Fascinating. Gordon, thank you. And I think Louise, right here in Brooklyn, wants to put an Italian exclamation point on this Italian thread. Right, Louise?
Hi, Brian. I'm back again. Brian, my husband's family taught me this expression. I can't say it in Italian, but what it translates to is the fish stinks from the head, regardless of how many little underfish there are. That's where the control and power is.
Louise, thank you very much. Anybody who can say that in Italian is welcome to call up and say it in Italian. Doesn't make it objectively true about Rupert Murdoch, but you can say it in Italian anyway. Dorian in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi. Felix, I have a question about looking at the scandal from a business perspective. We've been looking at it largely from a moral perspective, but I'm wondering if from a business perspective there's a different lesson, because over the decades, the News Corporation has created tremendous value for investors, including the time when they were doing a lot of these practices, and the only time that the value of the company from a business perspective has been really hurt is when they went after innocent individuals' phone records. And so, you know, I'm wondering, you know, it may sound a little cynical, but just looking at it as a financial matter or business matter, would the lesson be, you know, you can do these kinds of things, just don't go so far in doing them?
It's a really good question. I think that there's a number of answers to that. For one thing, Rupert Murdoch News Corporation has not actually created a lot of value for investors. The share price has underperformed the broader stock market and most media companies for decades now, for basically ever since Rupert Murdoch's been in charge. So for another thing, yes, you're right that in terms of business, you know, hacking phones was clearly good business for the News of the World. It was the largest circulation newspaper in the English language world. But the News of the World, and indeed newspapers in general, are a very, very small part of News Corporation. News Corporation has television, satellite TV, movies, books, you know, HarperCollins, lots of Fox, all of that. And the newspapers, even if you add them all together, are basically an afterthought. And the reason why Rupert Murdoch loves them so much is because that's, one, what he grew up with, and two, it gave him a huge amount of political influence in the UK, which again allowed him to then push through things like his attempted takeover of the satellite TV operations, which are where the real money is. So in terms of business, you know, you live by newspapers, you die by newspapers. What you get when you start getting very aggressive, as the News of the World did and as News International seems to have done, is you run this huge sort of reputation risk, and now that's come back to bite him.
Fabio in Montclair has that Italian translation, right, Fabio?
Yes, it is. Il pesce puzza dalla testa. The fish stinks from the head.
Thank you.
But I have a comment.
Go.
Okay. Except for your show, Brian, I have watched a lot of media in the last couple of days, and it seems to me the media focus constantly on this figure skating type performance of the Murdochs. Very few of the outlets spend time in the investigation. Yes, once in a while you hear that they lied and so forth, but I'm really kind of nauseated with this notion that they met expectations, therefore they are off the hook or whatever. This is not the way media should cover this story. They put a mirror in front of their own face, and they should see themselves reflected into this behavior.
Yes, and I think this is endemic to political coverage in general. We've talked about this a million times, that, you know, politics is so often covered as a horse race, which politician wins, which politician loses, and it's left to alternative outlets to actually go deep into the substance. Peter in New Hope in Pennsylvania, you're on WNYC. Hi, Peter.
Good morning. How are you?
Okay.
Felix, I want to ask you a question from a technology and regulation perspective. I work as a privacy officer in the healthcare field, and my question is, what are the regulators and legislators doing to create technology that prevents cell phones from being hacked?
I think that answer is moot at this point. The phone hacking, if you recall, was happening basically between 2003 and 2006 or so. It basically ended about 5 years ago, pretty much at the time that we all stopped leaving each other voicemails. I know I barely ever listen to voicemails anymore, and people really don't leave private information on other people's cell phone voicemails. Everyone's moved to other forms of communication. So I think that the whole voicemail hacking thing has more or less been eclipsed by technology at this point. You know, the next scandal, if there is a next scandal, is much more likely to be computer hacking than it is voicemail hacking.
Interesting. Although our news director, John Keefe, and some of our listeners heard this piece yesterday, has a piece that you can still hear at WNYC.org about how easy it actually is to hack into other people's voicemail, shocking though that is. David in Englewood, you're on WNYC. Hello, David.
Yes, I wanted to make 2 points. One is, I keep seeing all these journalists on TV and like the gentleman you have here, and it seems like to me they're just jealous of News Corporation. I mean, they keep talking about how Murdoch operates and everything, and I just wonder how many of these journalists, including people like Martin Bashir and these other far-left people, have even met Mr. Murdoch. And my second point is that if these journalists knew anything about business, they would realize, like they said, this is 1% of the gross revenue of the corporation. How much time would you spend on a penny out of every dollar of revenue? So I just think that this is all a big thing and it's just been blown up. And I wonder if all this attention would be paid if it were the New York Times in this situation. Would all these people be coming out with their butcher knives to try to besmirch the entire company? I don't think so.
David, thank you. Felix, what do you think? If some other than the hated by many people, Rupert Murdoch, had hacked into, I mean, there are many aspects of it, but hacked into a dead child's voicemail and erased messages so that they could hear other people leaving messages so they could get more scoops, and then paid police allegedly to cover things up, I don't know, would it be less of a big deal?
Well, I think you answered your own question. I think that there's a glimmer of a point there that, yes, there's a bit of piling on to Rupert Murdoch here. A lot of people have been harboring grudges against him for a very long time for various reasons, and they're taking this opportunity to start, you know, getting the knife in, which is only human, but he did bring it on himself. I mean, you know, the newspaper certainly did. And remember that, as I say, Rupert Murdoch, yes, his newspapers, yeah, the News of the World is 1% of his global portfolio, but it's 1% that he really cares deeply about. He calls up the editors of his papers on a very regular basis. Sometimes he even literally dictates the front page stories to them. I don't know if you recall a few years ago, there was that notorious front page of the New York Post where it said that Dick Gephardt was going to be the vice presidential candidate chosen by Al Gore.
Gephardt,
and that came
straight
from Rupert.
Well, folks, we're going to leave it here with Felix Salmon, wrote his finance blogger. Thank you for all your calls with your many angles and many points of view. What a fabulous and diverse audience we have politically and otherwise. So thank you all for all your calls. And Felix, we'll just leave it with this controversy, which has emerged behind the scenes during this conversation. Somebody suggesting that the phrase, "the fish stinks from the head," may actually be Turkish in origin rather than Italian. So maybe we'll get to the bottom of that on tomorrow's show.
Thanks, Brian.
Thanks for all the time. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, we continue our July series, Did It Work?, on President Obama's economic recovery programs. Today, the Dodd-Frank bank reform bill. Did it work, at least so far? And then we have Columbia University President Lee Bollinger still to come, proposing an American World Broadcasting Service. Murdoch and Fox, part of the context of that. And we have Paula Poundstone today. So stay with us, Brian Lehrer on WNYC.